This episode is presented by New York Mutual Trading.
Hey there, HRN listeners. This is Harry Rosenbloom, host of Feast Your Ears. I know that news about COVID-19 and the coronavirus has made a lot of people nervous about getting sick. This collective unease has already had a big impact on our restaurant and food communities, especially in New York's Chinatowns. We hope that now more than ever, our listeners will join us in supporting restaurants and the hospitality industry at large. Many of the restaurants we love are small, independent businesses. That means that even one or two bad weeks can put them in jeopardy of cutting staff, limiting hours, or even having to close for good. As long as we're still able, we should go out to eat and support our favorite restaurants. I think it's also great to remember that hospitality professionals are really good at hygiene and food safety practices. Long before there were guides all over the news about how to properly wash your hands, they were already experts at hygiene. Guests' health is tantamount to successful hospitality in any restaurant. And even if you don't want to go out, you can still support restaurants by ordering delivery, buying gift cards, and giving them some extra love on social media. What better way to handle a crisis than by supporting those in our own community? If we don't support them now, they might not be there when this crisis is over. Join HRN in supporting restaurants during this time, especially our friends in Chinatowns around the country. Thanks for listening.
Hey, welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Hey guys, I'm Jimmy Carboni. I'm the host here. It's Tuesday, March 10th, 2020, and we've got a long-awaited show here. One of the bigger stories in New York City craft beer is the story of Torch and Crown Brewing, and they're soon to open first of its kind, like production and restaurant brewery in Manhattan. So we're going to have the crew of Torch and Crown introduce themselves, and we're going to have a nice conversation, so...
Awesome. Jimmy, I'm Joe Correa, head brewer, co-founder over at Torch and Crown.
Christian Papanikolas, I'm the operating partner of the restaurant and brewery down in Soho.
Hello. This is Chris McClellan, marketing director over at Torch and Crown Brewing Company.
So, Chris, it's great having you at Torch and Crown, and thanks so much for putting the show together.
Of course. With us. Thanks for getting us on, Jimmy.
First time Joe's on, so we've had John, your other partner, on, but we want to hear it from you. So, Joe, you actually have some good brewing cred. You're not just a Wall Street guy that jumped into the beer scene.
No, I don't think I would have lasted on Wall Street very long at all. I can't do math to save my life. But out of college, I started working for a distillery in Boston. After that, I was at Rogue in Newport, Oregon. And then I spent, 3 to 4 years with Cane Brewing down in the Asbury Park area before John and I collectively came back together, because we started homebrewing together at like 16. Came back together to open this spot.
I'll tell you about it. Must have been 10 years ago I tried Cane, or 8 or 10 years ago, and I remember people saying that at the time was the best brewery in New Jersey. What was it like for you working there?
It was great. It was an awesome experience. When I started there, we were doing in the 2,000 barrel a year range. When I finally left, it was in that 12 to 13,000 barrel a year range. So it was an awesome place to be able to bring some big brewing experience to and try to help them fix some stuff there, but also get a ton of experience on the recipe side and what it means to be a more creative and hands-on brewer that way. So it was overall an awesome package to kind of put together to try to open our own spot.
Great. So what's the setup going to be like when you open in Manhattan? And just tell us what, Chris, you want us to tell us what it is. It's Torch and Crown Brewing, but there's more than just a brewery there.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll definitely defer to Joe on some of the vision here. Since we've got him in the room. But the idea is relatively simple in that we really are trying to be Manhattan's brewery. Manhattan hasn't had that kind of force. It hasn't had that business, in the city itself for quite a long time. There have been a few businesses that have brewed beer there, but in terms of being a full production brewery, that is certainly going to be part of it. And so the experience when you go there is going to be not only some of the best beer that you've had, and certainly something that's very homegrown. But additionally, with Christian on board, you can go there for an amazing meal. You can go there for an amazing experience. So you can come enjoy the beer, enjoy the food, and just enjoy the whole ambiance, basically.
Great. So Christian, we go way back. 2010, you were on one of our first food and beer pairing shows with Garrett Oliver when you had Resto and Cannibal. So to me, I was looking at my show notes today, and I was like, restaurant operator, Christian. It's got to be Christian,
yeah.
B. Your name one more time, because I can never pronounce it.
Christian Papanicolaou.
Yeah, so how did you get involved with the project?
It's more long than difficult. But
is that Swiss Papanicolaou? It's
100% Swiss. Yes, absolutely. I'm horrible at origin stories, quite frankly, but it's my memory is you know, being connected to you guys, to Joe and John, and having some, I don't know, some good beers and some good food over at Resto the Cannibal, and just sort of talking about it. And you know, I'd like to think, just like you, Jimmy, like, you know, we've been in this business a long, long time, and tried to champion beer and food for a long, long time. And it was something that was very important to me in the beginning of Resto, having sort of this very prominent beer list, and then obviously taking that into the Cannibal brand as well. And, you know, I hope to think that it was such a, you know, I've never got to work with a specific brand, and it's really exciting to me to do so, especially because I sort of sometimes I find myself drinking less beer, and I sort of self-proclaim like not as much beer. I don't drink as much beer as I used to. And I think these guys are getting me to drink more beer, which is really fun. I like to joke with Joe about it. I said, like, you know, I'm not an IPA drinker. Like, I'm the self-proclaimed, and I still, you know, my beer knowledge all came from Belgium, and that was what Resto was about. I had friends there. I was traveling there and spending time there. It's sort of the difference between drinking old school Bordeaux and drinking, you know.
I mean, Christian had the best, like, beer restaurant in New York City.
Oh, crazy good. When I heard that the partnership between Torch and Crown and Christian was coming together, I was unbelievably excited, because I remember going to the Cannibal and just mowing down and having amazing beer there. So.
Yeah, I mean, the goal is to champion that. I mean, being in Belgium, that's where I got it from. I mean, it was so inspiring to be in a country that had been doing it for so long. It's not unlike thinking, okay, I'm going to open a restaurant and be very wine-focused, and going to France and saying, oh my gosh, they've been doing this for so long, and there's so much history there. And I think Belgians in general just drink really good beer, and they like to celebrate it. It's not fussy with them, which I think is something that I'm really interested in, sort of the atmosphere and the mentality of hospitality. They can be overbearing in the way that they make you drink beer, which is sort of fun as well, which I like. But it was exciting to be able to do this and work with. And it's so fun to be working with these guys. And we're going on about two years of development right now, and getting close.
I might have to work in that neighborhood just
close,
so I can go in for lunch.
Getting
I can
close.
Have,
yeah.
Have
yeah,
my
yeah,
little getting, goblet of a Bock beer or something.
Something.
But so Joe, you guys. We've had you on Torch and Crown before, so we know that there's a production brewery in the Bronx that you guys took over a few years ago, and you're making some really great beers out of there. How has that influenced, you know, the brewery that you're going to open in Manhattan and the types of beers you're going to make, you know?
Certainly, yeah. I mean, it was an awesome opportunity for us. It was never what we, you know, set out to do. We've always been with this goal of being Manhattan's beer. In this struggle to find a location that you could put, hundreds of thousands of pounds of equipment on the floors and them not implode or need to gut an entire building to be able to facilitate having a production brewery in Manhattan, we had an opportunity up there to take over an existing space. So we took it, and we started doing some contract brewing for some of our friends up there, and it was that was a cool experience, you know, walking in. And being able to kind of turnkey brew as opposed to just being in this position where we're, you know, waiting a year or two to actually get off the ground. And there's a lot of value in recipe development and learning all that stuff and how other people are approaching making beer, for better or for worse. I mean, there's some stuff that you look at and you go, okay, like, not something that I would do. And you might learn something cool out of it, or you learn a way not to do something in the future. But it's allowed us to really put an awesome core team together ahead of actually having this Soho space open. So we've got brewers now from all over the country and different walks of life that are coming in and breathing some of the creative energy into what we're doing in a collaborative way that I think will be amazingly conducive to this small 10-barrel system we're putting in Manhattan.
Are there some beers that you're going to make in the Manhattan location that you've been dying to make that you haven't made at the larger brewery?
Absolutely.
Like what?
So I've
he's wanted, smiling now. Joe's smiling.
Yeah, I've wanted to do a primary bread fermentation beer for a while for Torch and Crown, just on the 30 barrel system and the fact that we're cranking two turns out a day, it's just really not something that's conducive to doing if you're trying to hand off that many pieces and actually make sure that you're not going to do something that's detrimental to the brewery at large. But on that smaller scale, we can really start to get fun and creative that way. So I want to do a primary ferment Brett, just kind of dedicate a small tank to it over in the corner and kind of see where we can take that. There's more traditional sour beers that I'd like to do out of there that doing them in Grundy's would be, a real possibility. And we've built the system out to be able to focus on making some of these more interesting new age IPAs without actually having to back into the processes that we would have to do up in the Bronx trying to convert a 20-year-old system to make it do something that, brewers want to do in 2020.
That's great.
So, I it's funny, I think about it so much of, I don't know if it's by accident or not, but, from the perspective of the restaurant, like if we could have a year of cooking primarily before we get into, but it's like a smaller kitchen, like you really get to develop that and you get to really get excited about it because you think about how much fun you get to have when you have a little bit more control over something versus large batching. The idea obviously being how much fun can we have with food and beer, and something that I've been super passionate about for a long time. And hopefully we get to a place, you get your rhythm in and you say, okay, hey, we should brew something that's going to go right here. We're going to cook something that's going to go right there and cross-pollinate as much as you can to have some fun with it.
Do you have some food and beer pairing ideas in mind?
I think, and I probably, if I went back and listened to the show we did with Garrett back in the day, I'd probably say I'm the guy that doesn't geek out about pairings, although I think there are things that are right. I always think I want to drink what I want to drink and I want to eat when I want to eat. I'm not somebody that feels that I can't eat a bunch of big steaks and drink a bunch of sparkling wine. Like it doesn't compute to me. I want what I want when I want it. That being said, there's definitely natural things that go together. And I think that's going to be the fun. I think naturally, my love of sort of that beef carbonade, Belgian braised, beer braised beef dish is something that I think is going to rear its head no matter what at some point. As we get into this sort of opening and we get into spring, that's going to be a bit harder to sort of swallow because it's a big braised dish. But it allows you to do, I don't mind using lighter beers to braise things and keeping things light, especially going into the summertime. And we've got an amazing chef on board as well. So it's like just to have, we're going to have some fun with it and see where it takes us.
What are the plans for opening? When's the date? Do you know? How do people find out more about you?
I haven't seen the email about the opening date. Have you guys gotten the email yet?
I'm hoping that Jimmy was going to give us a date today. Yeah, that was the goal.
I heard it was May something.
Yeah. If anybody's ever built anything in the world, they understand that the date is always way longer than you originally planned.
We've got a ton of plans. But the downtown build-out, so we were talking about it earlier. It's the old Van Damme Diner, right? And this was a gut renovation, right? So this is a ground-up, remove everything, and make it fit for brewing, make it obviously fit for permitting and occupancy and a kitchen and everything that didn't really exist in there before in a lot of ways. And so this process, to say that it's been a process is a massive understatement. So having just walked into this myself over the past couple of months and just seen the amount of progress that we've made over the past couple of months, it's pretty amazing. We would love to be open in the next few months for full retail, consumer, food and everything. But what we're going to do is you can always just go to the website as well and sign up. And then we're going to keep you updated
What's the website, Chris?
Just torchandcrown.com. And you guys can just check it out. And then as soon as you sign up there, you can subscribe. We're going to send you updates. We're going to make sure that you are up to date and everything. We're going to have some retail can sales down there probably in the next 2 to 3 weeks, hopefully, if not a little bit sooner. And we can keep people updated on that as well. So you can go in, you can buy some of the freshest beer in New York City, sometimes literally packaged less than 24 hours ago. So it's going to be pretty amazing.
And it's going to be it's a fairly sizable space. So we have, when it's all said and done, including outside, we'll be upwards of about 350 seats. So it's a big space. We've got
What is it comparable? Is it going to feel like a restaurant that has a big long beer bar? What's the real identity going to be like for the customer? Because I'm already excited to go there.
Right. Yeah. There's serving tanks on the ground floor. You can kind of see exactly where the beer's coming from for a portion of the bar, and it's not just a small micro brew pub kind of setup. It's a legitimate production brewery that we're putting in there. There's two 30-barrel tanks that are going to be on the ground floor as well, kind of overlooming the bar. And there's an entire floor dedicated specifically to brewing space in the basement. So there'll be a 3-vessel, 10-vessel barrel down there. Also doubles as private event space for us, you know, when we're not actually brewing. And you're actually going to be in there while...
So there'll be forklifts in the dining room?
More or less, yeah, exactly. Right?
We're going to require eyewear for everybody when they walk in.
Where the liquor tanks are and where the brewing facility is, you know, you've got upwards of 50 seats for private dining, but also there's a lot of, you know, we're talking about doing a lot of fun programming in terms of industry and getting people to come down and sort of having
You guys are going to be the best. I am so looking forward to this team that you've put together. And John's not here, but Joe, that's one question. It was more for John, but I think you can answer it. Team building. You know, how did you guys go about this? So, you know, you said when you took over the brewery in the Bronx, it was originally just you brewing. So maybe on your end, how do you put together your brewing team?
I mean, I think it's the same, regardless of if it's, you know, Christian that are here now, as relationships that John had built previously, and then working with people that you know and trust, and then having that sort of dynamic is the important part of it. So, I mean, our first hire was a guy that I had worked with at Kane, who, you know, he was a kick-ass guy, and he had been doing great stuff for them. He didn't quite have the brewing experience at the time, but his ability to build an infrastructure and the mind was right. And I knew enough about him and worked well with him in the past to trust him, and just kind of allowing that sort of mentality to cascade, so that everyone that's working together is on the same page, I think, is the important part there.
You know, Torch and Crown to me, actually, since you guys opened a couple of years ago, you've right away been leaders in the New York City craft beer community, whether it's contracting for other startups and some of the collaborations. I don't know if you want to talk about that, Chris, because I feel like from day one they've had good vibes and their brand is really strong.
I agree, and I was an outsider until recently, so it was really nice to watch this process, you know, from the ground up. The story of them buying of Joe and John kind of calling an audible and buying the production facility in the Bronx first, right before really getting and really being able to cut their teeth on what they want to do and who they want to be up there before getting Soho, you know, off the ground and rolling as well is pretty amazing. I looked at the entire thing and I said, this is a journey that nobody else has really gone through before. Having, you know, I'm not a native New Yorker. I grew up in Vermont. And so being here for 5 or 6 years and knowing that this is my home now, nobody has tried to do this, right? You know me, Jimmy, I want to be part of that adventure. I saw these guys and I said, this is the craziest thing I've seen in a long time. I think Christian and I, when we first got to know each other, bonded over this fact. I still make fun of them pretty much on a daily basis for how crazy this adventure is.
Wait, I didn't realize we were allowed to do that. I get to add that to my repertoire. I'm so excited.
It's unbelievably necessary. Okay. Because we got to be real about the whole thing, you know?
Right.
I would say one thing of note, in our era, at one time there were more breweries in Manhattan, even in the 90s, that first craft beer boom. But in our era, other than like Polliner coming in and having a brewery, or the little micro tiny brewery on the top of Italy, and maybe one or two other things, there really hasn't been a brewery in Manhattan.
Right.
And what's the challenge, Joe? Is it just money? Is it spaces, or just
what's the one thing that's been a challenge?
All of it.
The one thing. Yeah. No. It's I guess it's a little bit of column A, B, C, and D there. Yeah. I mean, the biggest thing for me has just been trying to find a way to get a production flow into a space like that. We're fortunate enough that the building is allowing us to use the cellar. The sub-cellar is double height, but now you've got a disjointed brewery on three different floors that, you know, in a perfect world, I've got the largest open square I could make and just kind of surround things, and everybody can move fluently and seamlessly, and nobody's impeding each other. So figuring out how to get the tanks downstairs, we had to blast a giant hole in the ground floor with a removable staircase so that when the tanks show up, they can get in, and then we can put the stair back and try not to impede on service there. So, you know, all of that is time consuming. It's costs a lot of money, but it also, you know, production wise, it's necessary for us to be able to operate an actual production brewery there.
Is there a brewery, not in terms of the beer too, but more in terms of the operations or the way it's structured, that you would like to emulate or that has inspired you?
Oh, inspired. I mean, there's a ton of brewing inspiration that, you know, that I can draw from. I think just purely from a beer standpoint, I've always been a huge Firestone guy. I've never had a bad beer from them.
Flawless.
Yep, yep, they're flawless. Yep. There's a wonderful away portfolio, but there's also this wonderful home portfolio that it's really difficult to get anywhere else in the country if you really are interested in those beers.
I brought some fun things for us to taste, and I literally had like 7 Firestone beers I was staring at. I was like, nobody's going to want to drink this stuff. I'm going to – also because I can't talk about it.
But let's pop some more beers.
Sure.
And then and what about operations? I'm like – as the brewer, is there a setup? Are all breweries the same now, or do you think that some of them are smarter or more along the lines of what you'd like? You can tell me one place you like that you.
No, we're good friends with some of the Breakside guys out in the Portland area, and I've always been super impressed with their setup. And they do have a large production facility that's out. That's out just outside of Portland, but they just opened a brew pub in the Pearl District in Portland that really does take incredible advantage of space, allows them to have hyper control over the beer that they're making, but also can focus on kind of seating and things like that and making sure that it's a user experience that people really dig and enjoy. And it's not just happens to be a brew system there. It is a legitimate brewery. It's just packed into Northwest Portland.
Breakside Brewing.
Yeah.
And then what we're drinking, so the... This is your first pils that you've brewed at Torch and Crown?
It is, yeah, yeah.
Tell me about what's sure. the profile? What type of pils is it?
Sure, yeah. I mean, it's a German style pils, real kind of simple there. Just a German pilsner malt, maybe a little bit of flaked wheat for some head retention. Hallertauer and the hopping profile and a German lager yeast. I'm a big proponent of kind of time on these beers. Right now we have a couple different iterations of pilses that we're working on. We got one in the pipeline that the idea is to give it as much possible time as we can. The beer is kind of dictating it, and that's kind of the focus of what the Soho facility is going to look like as well. But I think we just hit day 48 on that beer in tank. I was just tasting it today, and it's really starting to evolve into exactly what we're looking for. So hopefully, in the next 12 to 20 days,
that's like
be
7.
Where it's at.
Yeah. So ideally, what do you want? Like 10 weeks, 12 weeks?
Honestly, the nice thing is I just want as long a time as it takes for beer to be what I want it to be. So if that happens in 30 days, fantastic. If it takes 90, then it takes 90. And we'll kind of figure out what works.
And that was the thing, that sentiment right there, that mentality is the thing that kind of brought me into the whole project, right? Is being about the beer, being about the quality, the things that Torch and Crown can represent in Manhattan. This is the center of the world, in many ways, if you choose to define it that way. And if we can stand for those things and we can say, look, we're going to make the best, we're going to be the best. It's really hard to do that consistently, right? Like, a lot of people who say, oh no, that's good enough. And hopefully we can, we can stick to that, the obvious operational challenges around that, aside. It's inspiring to hear that kind of thing, and we definitely want to continue to try to be that way. We want Manhattanites to discover beer, but we also want New Yorkers to discover beer. There's 45 breweries in the city. We're incredibly proud. I'm personally incredibly proud of all of them for having done so much over the past 10 years. But we still, I think craft beer still sits on the periphery a little bit. I think most people in New York don't have that kind of feeling of it being part of their home the way it should. So hopefully we can change that a little bit too.
Well, and the other piece of it is, for me, and Chris is absolutely right, is, I want there to be a communal thing. It's food, drinking beer. If I think back to drinking beer, sort of when I learned it, when I started to really get into it in Belgium, it was always this communal thing, and it always involved food. I can remember my Belgian friends, the second I started, like if we were just going to sit back and just, pound Jupilers or Stellas or things like that, like that's fine. That's at the bar late night. But if you're eating and if you're drinking good beer, you're eating with it, and it's part of the collaboration. It's part of the fun, and I want that to be the case. Like I want it to feel.
What's going
to
be on the menu besides a seasonal beef, carbonated? one item.
We're definitely going to bring the large format feast from that originated at Resto and the Cannibal. So whole pigs, whole lambs, whole racks of ribeyes, things like that. Something that's very communal.
And shareable.
That's sort of the order ahead mindset.
Super shareable, yep.
But, look, I think people dine differently, and I think about food differently than I did sort of 14, 13, 14
one
years
one item.
Ago.
Do you have a menu item yet?
That's I got not lots, large I got, format I got, meat. I got lots, I got lots
Tell
of
me
menu,
one,
not
bro.
Lots of menu
May
items.
Not be on the menu, but you'd like to see?
You know, we're definitely not trying to go sort of the traditional beer.
One dish.
I'm not short for words, as Chris and I can always. Chris and I'll get in 35-minute conversations about nothing, but which is why I love them. But the goal is not to do what I would call total traditional sort of beer food. That being said, I'm not going to ever discount the fact that, you know, hot dogs go good with beer and pretzels and beef jerky and things like that. So we're going to pull what was a very short-lived Cannibal Dog number 1.0, as we called it. 2.0 became this very, like, sort of Maopo tofu Szechuan-y thing. But the original Cannibal Dog was a ode to the Coney Diners in Detroit. So it's an old Greek heritage, two brothers that split, and it's a beef and beef heart chili with yellow mustard and white onion on a potato roll. And so we're going to bring that as something that...
So it'll be like a chili dog.
It's a chili dog. It's a chili dog, but, you know, a little Greek heritage there. So, you know, back to the old country like I'm from. And
so it's a chili dog with Greek heritage, so...
Yeah, it's like...
It's still a chili dog,
yeah, by all means.
All right.
But, you know, huge vegetable program because it's important that people eat vegetables. And I think, you know... Just food that I think anybody wants to eat and eat every day. And, you know, back to the point, it's like I want to eat real food and drink beer. I never think about it as like, oh, it's got to be always like what we would have historically thought about beer food, which is sometimes kind of like bar food. You know,
potatoes are getting a better rap these days. Yes. They're actually being reclassified as a vegetable.
They are a vegetable.
So, you know, a little French fries.
Yeah, French fries will be, yes, we will have French fries. There's no question about it. But
yeah. So, Joe, going back to you, man, you know, some of the people that are working with you, I just saw that you did a Pink Boots Society collaboration with some New York City women brewers.
Absolutely, yeah. Megan, our head of operations, is awesome, and you know, didn't come from a beer background, but is super smart and has really picked up an enormous amount about actually brewing since she started with us. So she had this idea for a beer where she's always seemed to like a lot more traditional kind of pale ale beers, and the hop profile in these Pink Boots hops are really interesting. There's a mix of some fun stuff in there. If I remember right, it's like Laurel and Azaka and Eldorado and one other hop that's kind of rounds the whole thing out. So she wanted to do a more kind of like taking an old, almost like Sierra Nevada, like base pale, and then throwing a bunch of kind of new age hop techniques and hopping profiles to it, given the spread of hops that were there. So really from the ground up, it was kind of her beer conception, and we had everybody out on Sunday. We were able to run the thing through, and I'm excited to drink it.
So when that beer comes out, how do you guys sell it? Who gets it? What's the identity of that beer?
Yeah, so the naming process for any of our beers usually just comes from one person, whoever kind of owns that idea. I think that's true for most breweries. But then after that, we really do try to sell in that story first before we actually get to the beer itself. We want the beer to speak for itself. We want the quality to speak for itself. But when we're out there, you know, with our retailers in New York City specifically, because right now we don't have a space to sell it on our own, we want to make sure that they understand that, you know, and they can kind of get behind that and inform their customers. And we try our best, you know, across all of our marketing channels to do that as well. But that's what it's been about. Luckily, because of the size and because of the batch size, we can kind of continue to be pretty nimble, right, with the way that we choose to produce these beers. And it's not such a big deal to stick to flagships or stick to cores. The identity of who Torch and Crown Inn is going to evolve.
So the Pink Boots collab will probably come out in about a month?
Yeah.
Yep. And then the other one, so the latest Pilsner, give a shout out. On Instagram, we posted a picture of your Pilsner can. Both Carmine Street Beer in the West Village and B-Town Brews in Ozone Park will be carrying the pills. And Chris, you said you were delivering the pills to other places as well today.
Yes, I've got some beer in there, and we're chucking it over to Gloria DeBaldi here in Brooklyn and a few other spots as well. So you'll see runner up all over the city at your best beer.
Runner up pills. That's
yep,
it.
Yep.
All right, we're gonna take a short break. We'll be back in a minute on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
Premier Japanese food, This episode is brought to you by New York Mutual Trading, the premier Japanese food, alcoholic beverage, and restaurant supply specialist. Mutual Trading is the Japanese food authority, true to the heart in upholding genuine Japanese food traditions, and progressive in exploring new ways to provide innovative restaurant supplies and services. They import, export, distribute, and manufacture the top brands for retailer and food service customers nationwide. Learn more at nymtc.com.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. You can become a member and support all the 30 shows on heritageradionetwork.org. All right, so we got Torch and Crown Brewing here. They're going to open up a brewery in Manhattan with a restaurant, and that's a big story. So, Chris, why is that so special?
There's so many.
There's 45 breweries in New York City. Why is opening one in Manhattan such a big deal?
The business challenges, I mean, just getting down to the fundamentals and cutting through the red tape, the business challenges of opening anything in Manhattan. I mean, Christian knows this when he opened all of his restaurants, and the negotiations, the lease negotiations, just the build out, the infrastructure, the amount of services that are required, right, in order to keep it off the ground. All of those things are part of the formula, and it's an intimidating process. And I think Joe can speak to this better than I can, but the number of things that you have to keep your eye on in order to make sure that it works and it works well and the timelines are managed, even if you hire a project manager and a contractor, even if you hire an architect and all of these other things, there are so many factors involved, right?
Certainly, yeah. I mean, we're even getting hit by there's a great PSA at the beginning of the show here about people continuing to not engage in aversion behavior.
To wash your hands.
Support the New York City restaurants.
That, but unfortunately, which you're not
going to speak of. Exactly, right?
Yeah, wash your hands.
But, we had an equipment shipment
delayed. Wash your hands, go out to restaurants, don't be shy.
Exactly. But we did have an equipment shipment delayed as a result of it because people are engaging on a global scale in that sort of aversion behavior. And it's not great, but it's not great for people, but it's also not great for trying to open a business. There's curveballs like that that are just getting thrown left and right and trying to open a brewery, right? Whether that's that or the boiler flu or... you had a whole set of plans drawn, and you realize that somebody was off by 3 or 4 inches.
How tall is the building that you're in?
It's pretty tall.
20 floors.
So that impacts things like venting and all that?
Yeah, I mean, it's, I would never say that small building is easier, but when you have a large building with multiple tenants, and it was actually two buildings combined, you end up with, between your expediters and your architects, you're dealing with just so many more variables and so many more people at the conversation that you're sort of checking boxes when you go through process, that it just becomes a slower process. I laughingly, definitely not that old, but I kind of always have this rhetoric of like, stop emailing everybody, because an email should really end up in a 24 to 48 hour response. If something's urgent, get on the phone and let's get it done, because it's, it just, that little, every time you do that, if you multiply it times 8 or 9 months, you lose a lot of time just going through the process.
Watching that journey has been unbelievable. I mean, from the outside and now from the inside, watching that journey.
Yeah. Building restaurants in the city is not an easy task. Putting anything in the city,
here's a specific. I'd heard that in the old days that every floor you add, so you're putting in a kitchen with gas and venting.
Correct.
So additional story for just a basic venting was $10,000. So
per floor.
So correct. Now it's probably a lot more than that.
Well, so for us, because the floor, when you get it to a certain height of a building, you have to scrub it. You can't go up that far because obviously it becomes cost prohibitive, right? To put iron to the roof of a 20-story building, you're talking about it's a lot of money. So we end up scrubbing it, but look, even then, there's a lot of things, and we have a real kitchen. We have a full kitchen to be able to service 350 seats. It's important for us to be able to do the right stuff and to be able to get that food out.
What are some things in the kitchen? It's just like, you have any special equipment?
The combi ovens definitely play the part today. And their AltoSham has been a great partner of ours. It's a really great brand that builds wonderfully beautiful ovens, and they allow you to cook things faster. It's gas and steam. Gas, steam, convection. When we do whole pigs, the dream from any perspective would be great, man, we can get a great smoker and we can smoke the pig for 12, 15 hours and it'll be, and it's always very romantic. But how many pigs can I do in that volume? You know, with this way, I can do it in 3 hours and it's going to come out. I'll pull, you know, I can
here's pull. Here's a chef quiz. And if anyone gets this, gets a free Torch and Crown hat. There's a French pastry that's like a cheese puff that you can bake in the oven that's amazing with beer. Who has it? Does anyone know?
Pat the shoe?
That's the dough.
That's the dough.
What would you make that. With that?
Well, you wouldn't make profiterole.
Begins with a G.
Oh,
Gougères.
Oh, God, give me a second.
I gotta give it to you.
One
of my great memories, I had a crazy chef once, and I can say he was crazy, and he made Gougères, and he was cooking batches to order.
Correct, yes.
You got to make that for beer, because yes. It's more than beer, it's culinary.
Yes,
that's
of
my
course,
two cents.
But cooking to order, you know, listen.
Now I'm the restaurant consultant.
Brilliant,
come
brilliant,
on.
Really brilliant. We used to do them at Resto, and we stuffed them with chicken liver mousse, which was really yummy.
One of the other big issues with smoking a whole pig is you have to shut down 6th Avenue for 15 hours because you bring the smoker in and
correct.
You have to put it right on 6th Avenue.
As a 10-year member of community boards in the city, I'm hoping to think that at some point in time we're going to find a way to shut down Van Damme Street between 6th and Barrack.
To do a block party with a bunch of pigs
and stuff. Yeah,
we'll get
the Big Apple barbecue back in downtown. Ugh, that sin, the sin of that leaving.
Oh, they left, didn't they?
They did. Yeah, it was my neighbor.
I'm sure you could pick up on what it was, but that's another story. So, Joe, I want to know more about you, man. You are a great story. Cane Brewing to me was this like mythical top New Jersey brewery for a long time, partly because they never sold in New York City. How do you feel like that? The scarcity like that matter in terms of how people perceive a brewery?
To some degree, I mean, scarcity, I think, is always going to make people want something more, right? But the key there was just making great beer and with a great team, and that's ultimately what we're trying to create here. We had a lot of really passionate guys at the time that I was there. We grew an enormous amount in a short period of time. And the brew staff was incredibly tight-knit, and no one ever wanted to walk away from the day if there was something left to do that was going to make the beer that extra inch, right? And that's kind of the mentality that we're trying to bring to our own product here. It was in a great environment to be in and one that, you know, ultimately we're recreating. But that to me was that little extra care at the end of every day, that little extra hour, 15 minutes, whatever it was, to make sure that the beer was exactly what you wanted it to be was kind of the difference maker there, I think, in a lot of ways.
And you said for your pills that you really want to make sure it has enough time, and that's what you're going to be able to do in the Manhattan Brewery. Do you feel that way about all your beers? Like you want is time an important part of your beers?
Certainly, yeah. I mean, there's ways that you can try to speed production along and shortcuts that you can take and. There's always going to be the reality of being a production brewery to some extent, right? That this beer needs to be out, or you know that tank is needed for something else that I'm also super passionate about, and there's a kind of a risk assessment you have to make. And one small change in any of those places is not going to have this grand impact on the final product. But when people are consistently making decisions like that, that becomes a real issue. So, you know, being able to give the time the beer needs is incredibly important, whether that's just another day on the hops to try to extract a little bit more flavor out of them, or just giving a lager an extra couple of days to try to mature a little more. If that's a 10-20 day window, that's a 10-20 day window. And it's something that we're committed to from the brewing side to make sure we're doing.
Well, I mean, and you're going to be making different types of beers as well. Right now, Christian, you popped an old lambic for us?
Yeah, so this is probably a 12-year-old Dekem. So it was one of the best blenders in Belgium. I still, you know, my heart will always be in Belgian beer because that's where I learned about beer. And it's just sort of fun and interesting to sort of go back in that history. And, you know, I still will drink the Trappist Ales, not unlike drinking old Bordeaux or old Burgundy. You know, people that have been brewing beer for that long have a sensibility that I think is hard to match. It doesn't mean that new beer is not great. It just means that, you know, I still have that sensibility. So this is a blend of a bunch of different lambics. He's got access to sort of Cantillon and Trifontaine and things, and he just blends out from that. This was 3 years when it was bottled, so it's probably about 13, 14 years old. And they're pretty variant in their bottles, but, you know, super sour, really low A alcohol, and and tart and fun. And
you had one of the best, probably the best beer restaurant in New York City for a long time. So Christian, tell us about this team. I mean, Chris, tell us about this team because you've got one of the owners as a brewer who's really paid his dues, and you've got a top restaurant operator. So you're not just bringing in a chef, you're actually bringing in a restaurant operator to run the restaurant portion.
Yeah, and thank God. Thank God for that.
Seriously.
There's the formula, like I said before, the formula for bringing, making this successful. We're still figuring this stuff out. We're really grateful for all the support that we see out there. And the good thing is that all of the people who work at Torch and Crown right now are more than willing to sort of pivot on a dime. We're willing to look at what's working, what's not working, change those things as quickly as possible. It's really hard to make really good beer, and it's really hard to make really good food. And we hope that people understand that, they appreciate that. I think they will. They're really, really excited so far. You know, and when they come and experience what we've got to serve, it should be a good one. But the whole team has been pretty amazing to kind of see in action over the past few months, and so we're just getting started, obviously. So lots to go.
Look, it's a hard process, no question about it. I mean, in the sense of obviously being part of this team, and then as I start thinking about the people that we're bringing on for Soho, it's the same thing. It's where's your, you know, what's the credibility? What's your passion about beer? You know, what have you done? You know, our executive chef was the chef at Eataly for 8.5 years, and you know, he understands the volume, but also, you know, he helped create that beer area experience up there, and which was a really important part. And our general manager is one of the people that I've known for a long time that really has the breadth of not only beer but also spirits and also wine. And it's important, like, we, you know, even as much as that's a small portion of what we'll do, it's important that still matters, you know, because I want the balance. And I think, you know, look, I'm always going to be a wine drinker no matter what. So it just, you know, or so. That's great.
And Joe, anything else you want to say?
Yeah, I mean, certainly. I mean, this whole concept of team building and things like that, I mean, Christian and I met, and one of the first things we bonded over was his love for Belgian beer, but also his love for low ABV beer and the kind of the sense of community that makes. And it being able to kind of to drink together for an extended period of time, I think is a portion of what this Belgian beer culture is talking about is. But the fact that we're all able to kind of get together and the team can be like-minded and what the goal and vision is here, I think is an important part of what we have going on.
That's great. Well, I'm really excited to start hanging out more on Van Dam Street, which is, it's really by the Holland Tunnel, but that's like Hudson Square,
yeah.
City Winery. Yep. This is a part of Manhattan that, like many other parts, is becoming more of a destination, and people are working there, and it's very cool. You're west of 6th Avenue, right?
Correct. About 20 feet.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. On the Spring Street stop.
Yeah.
So literally you can walk outside and
so it's Soho proper. You're in Soho, Manhattan.
Yes. Yep.
So you can't get a better location. So great job, guys. Congratulations, awesome. Joe and John, and bringing on Christian and Chris. And Chris McClellan, you know, check him out. He used to be the brew enthusiast and some other things, but now he's Torch and Crown too. So
still there. We're still kicking around. So, but
you got a great team.
Yeah,
and please let us know when that restaurant, brewery, tasting room opens up.
Yes,
because it's going to be big news for New York City. So
awesome!
Thank you guys so
great
much.
Great to be here.
One more time, everybody, just say your names and thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks a lot for having us on, Jimmy. This is Chris McClellan over at Torch and Crown,
and this is Christian Papanikolaos,
Joe Correa.
You guys are great. Thanks for joining me on the
Cheers.
Heritage Radio Network.
Cheers, Jimmy.
Big shout out to our producer, Dylan Hoyer. Intern Kevin Chang Barnum, it's his last day. Kevin, thanks for doing such great work with us the last 8 months. And engineer Jess. And we'll catch you next time on Beer Sessions Radio. All right. Woo!
Woo!
Beer Sessions Radio is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be part of the food world's most innovative community? subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.